Thank you for listening to Psychedelic Parenting, a service of Awakening Families. If you like what you hear, consider a tax-deductible gift to this work through our fiscal sponsor, MAPS, or use one of our Amazon links when you're buying the things you need.
Want to share with their young people the grandeur and the glory that they are encountering.
What's really important is the felt presence of direct experience. We have to stop consuming our culture. We have to create culture. Create your own roadshow. Nexus of space and time, where you are now, is the most immediate sector of your universe.
Welcome once again to the psychedelicparenting.org podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan. With me today is our friend Natalie Gregson. Natalie is a young adult author and is the creator of a book which we were very excited for, and we've been selling at tables at conferences, called Just Call Me Is, An Introduction to Mindfulness. And it's an amazing book, which if you haven't heard me spread the good news about this book, you haven't been listening hard enough, because I talk about it everywhere I go, and I've been giving away copies to people left and right. And it teaches kids about developing mindfulness techniques through this amazing vehicle of the children discovering a journal that was written by their own higher self to them. And it's a beautiful piece of work. It's got great hand-drawn illustrations. And if you have a kid who's between the ages of 10 and 15, I would highly recommend getting it. Natalie has a new book that she is currently doing a crowdfunding for, and it's called Call Me Perfect. And it's the sequel to Just Call Me Is. And we wanted to bring her on again to talk about the book and promote the Kickstarter, because we think that her work is really important to our mission and to the mission of creating positive families and healing some of the pain and trauma that children in our culture face. So welcome to the show, Natalie.
Thank you.
So as we get started, why don't you tell us, just give us an introduction to the book and tell us what people can expect from it.
Sure. Okay. So Call Me Perfect is the sequel to Just Call Me Is, which came out in December. And just like Call Me Is, it's very much, it's written in kind of a handwritten font. And in the same way, it's written to the reader from the reader's inner self, as though they've just found this journal. And the first part is the story, and the second part is a workbook and some journal pages, so that it's actually really interactive for the reader. But this one focuses specifically on all things body. Mostly that's body image and kind of self-acceptance, but it also touches on gender and consent and sexuality and things that kids, I think, are having questions about and struggling with at younger and younger ages.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, that's a really, really needed thing right now, because, you know, just with so many schools and communities pushing these kind of like abstinence only sex education models that clearly are not very helpful to children. It's great to have some alternative voices in there. So thanks for doing that.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So what got you interested in this topic of body image and self-image?
it's something that I started struggling with when I was about 11 or 12. I remember going on my first diets and kind of becoming aware of like being pretty and needing to be skinny and things like that when I was about 11. And then by the time I was 13, I believe, I had, you know, kind of spiraled deeply into that and ended up with an eating disorder by the time I was 13. And throughout my teen years was just really, really unhappy with my body image, even though, you know, it didn't change. But I just, you know, I looked in the mirror and saw something totally different than everybody else did. And I got help when I was about 18, and then kind of, you know, I thought I was healthy. And then it turns out throughout my 20s, I was, or throughout most of my 20s, I was kind of constantly yo-yo dieting and never quite satisfied. So it's taken a long time to get where I am. And I'm still, you know, some days when I'm stressed out, it's still a struggle. Yeah. And just all of this is exhausting. And I was just thinking, wow, how great would it have been to have a book or some kind of support at this young of an age? You know, really, it's written to kids so that they don't have to deal with this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. This whole idea of that there's a certain way that your body should look. If you know, if you want to wear a swimsuit, you have to look like this. If you you know, and it's boys and girls both. I think girls definitely face it much, have a much more hard time in this realm than boys do. But boys as well. I mean, I was one of those. I was a fat kid. And I, you know, I didn't really like to, you know, go swimming without a t-shirt on, and and I still kind of struggle with weight and body image issues. And you know, I've gone back and forth a number of times. I lost a bunch of weight when I was an undergraduate, and I kept it off for a pretty long time. Just stayed really physically active, and then I ended up getting this desk job and gained about 40 pounds, and then I took some off and then felt pretty good about myself. And then a few, then I gained it back on again. And I've gone back and forth. This past summer, I worked in landscaping, and I lost like 30 pounds, which was really cool. but it's been an interesting path for me too. That sounds like it echoes what you're discussing. It's, you know, just, I'm just one of those people that has a really slow metabolism, and you know, and I've learned to kind of be okay with that. Like, it's like what it really means, it's not so much that I'm like I get fat easy, is that like the positive image of having a slow metabolism is that you age slower,
and, oh yeah,
you know, that you're not sort of like burning at both ends. And what I've had to sort of learn to do, and it works into this whole thing of mindfulness too, is that I have to sort of cultivate a relationship with hunger, I guess. Is it's not like I'm not eating, but that I realize, like, you know, we have so much high density calories, and I'm, you know, I'm almost 40. I'm not super physically active right now, and I don't really need to eat a bunch of, you know, sugar and sweets and all that kind of stuff that's like always around everywhere. And especially the packaged food we have is just so dense in the ways of calories. And so, you know, it's a big question in our culture. You know, it's so much funny that we have so much abundance in terms of food in our society, and so little of it is healthy. And then we, you know, criticize each other and our children and our significant others about weight and the way we look and all that stuff. And it's not really that important.
Yeah. This is kind of reminding me, okay, since launching the Kickstarter, I've been getting messages from people, which has been really cool, just telling me their stories, their own struggles with food and body image. And this one woman messaged me yesterday from, I think she was somewhere in Norway, and she was saying that she's only ever heard, like, don't get fat, you know, like there's so much talk about don't be obese and it's not healthy, that no one ever discusses, like, oh, there's the complete other side of the spectrum, which is don't be anorexic, don't be too skinny.
Yeah.
So she had that struggle of like, oh, I'm just being really healthy. And then it turned out that she kind of swung the opposite way completely. And so it's almost like there's no winning if you listen to what other people are telling you, because it's just, you can't go too far to the one side or too far to the other side.
Yeah.
So you really just have to kind of learn to listen to your body.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that really highlighted that for me this past week was all of the, you know, I don't pay that close of attention to sort of any mainstream media stuff. I don't really watch television and I'm not really into sports, but the Super Bowl was on, was like streaming online. So we tuned in just long enough to watch Lady Gaga and then turn it off. Mm-hmm. And I was really surprised that there was like a big sort of blow up on social media about her having like a little like sort of belly or whatever. And like, I didn't notice that at all when I was watching.
Oh, wow.
I was like paying attention to the show, but I guess there was like, you know, people complaining that her like belly was stuck out a little bit because she didn't have like super flat abs or whatever. And it was
oh my God.
You see the pictures and it's like craziness. Like she was basically like super happy. She like, you know, it felt like she was in the best shape of her life. And then someone was like, oh, you know, you're not allowed to go out with a midriff showing because you have a little bit of fat on your belly. And it's like, stupefying, which I think, you know, when it comes to Lady Gaga, I mean, her whole like persona is about, you know, sort of giving a middle finger to sort of mainstream stereotypes and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. So it seems almost like people sort of playing into her, like sort of they caught themselves in her trap in some way mm-hmm. to like ridicule her for body image when her whole message is like, you know, fuck body image.
Yeah, so. I was born this way, right?
Right, exactly.
Oh man. Wow, I didn't even know about that. That is awful. It's just that stuff is everywhere, you know. I don't watch television either, but if you ever just go to the supermarket and you're checking out, there's just everywhere in front of you is, oh, she's pregnant, she has a baby bump, oh, she's gained weight, oh, who's hot, who's not, you know?
Right. Yeah, and it's so funny, women's magazines, that it'll have recipes for baked goods and then like people complaining about being fat, right?
Right. Yeah.
Is this one similar to Just Call Me Is in that it has kind of a story as well as the workbook?
Yes, it starts with a story. And actually, I can tell you this, it's not really a secret. So this is going to be a multi-book series. Mm-hmm. I already know what the next one will be. After that, I have ideas. I'm thinking probably one will dive further into gender and sexuality, which I'm really interested in. Mm-hmm. But in each one, the characters are somehow tied together. So in this book, we actually follow a character that was briefly mentioned in Just Call Me Is. Because, you know, as you know, Is, the inner self, is everybody's inner self. So mm-hmm. Is has like the scoop on everybody. So while Tori, who's the character in Just Call Me Is, she moves off to the United States in the first book. Mm-hmm. So meanwhile, we're kind of looking at the meanwhile, what's been going on with her best friend Marjorie in England. And we're following her story in this book.
Right. So what insights does the story offer for children?
Well, it starts with the story just kind of following Marjorie's own struggles with body image and how things like that can kind of start and how she kind of starts to turn to food and then becomes scared of food because when she's 12 years old in the story, and that's mm-hmm. around the age that I remember, you know, you're hitting puberty and suddenly it's like, wow, my body's changing and I'm scared of food. I remember that happening to a mm-hmm. lot of girls. And then I think a bit later to the boys too. Uh-huh. So readers kind of learn like it's not, well, first of all, your body is going to change and it's good at that age. And they learn, the healthy fats and things like that, that you absolutely have to eat, especially as a female going through puberty. They learned that, you know, it's not actually about your body. It's not about food. When you're having some kind of body image issue or you're either restricting your food or eating too much, that's usually a sign of like trying to control something else in your life mm-hmm. or trying to numb some unfelt pain, mm-hmm. which I think sometimes parents and teachers don't give kids credit for. Like they're going through a lot of pain.
Yes.
And I think we kind of gloss over that as like, oh, you're a kid. What do you have to worry about? You know?
Yeah. And the middle school years are most challenging time of life, I think. My son has a book that he just read not too long ago that he really likes, a young adult. It's called Middle School, The Worst Years of My Life. Mm-hmm. And that's so true. Like,
yeah, it's just true.
There's, you know, you don't know who you are and you're sort of like coming into your own and you have the body image stuff and you're going through puberty and your emotions are raging all the time and they don't make any sense to you. And friendship alliances change from, you know, from your the people that you were friends with in childhood to get different interests and they sort of move out of your life. And yeah,
there's and suddenly so much. Being cool is the most important thing you can ever imagine, you know?
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
So I think that it's really great that you're using these books to target that audience in this kind of way, because yeah, there's so much need in our culture to help these kids. And it's also for me to, you know, part of what I'm trying to do with my work is to create rites of passage so that there's a way to feel like something is really happening and there's like a shift. Because one of the things that I think that we don't really teach our kids is that this time, even though it's challenging, it's a time of transition and it's not the way things will always be.
Right.
I don't think we really emphasize that enough. We minimize their feelings and say, oh, you're just a kid, it doesn't matter. But what we don't say is like, yes, I recognize that this is hard for you and I remember that it was hard myself and, you know, it's going to be okay. And this is a time that will pass. You know, one of the things for me whenever I'm either having a challenging psychedelic experience or I am helping someone else through a challenging psychedelic experience is to just like remind them that, you know, you're going to be okay in 6 hours. Mm-hmm. And,
right.
You know, it's puberty lasts a little longer than 6 hours, but you know, it does have an end and you will even out and things will get better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of cool to me, actually, that middle school is this little like – it's this little chunk of time in between elementary and high school, which are the longer chunks of time. It just is suiting that it's kind of the chaotic transitional period.
Yeah. So tell us about some of the worksheets and activities that you have in the book.
Okay. So yeah, after the story, it goes into kind of a workbook and some journal pages and even some like scribbling exercises and things like that. But a lot of the exercises in here are authentic relating games, which are so cool. I borrowed them from a woman in Austin named Sarah Ness, who runs the authentic relating community here. Uh-huh. And she picked out some really, really great exercises specifically for body image and relating to how you feel about yourself and shaming other people and things like that. So there's some exercises like sentence stems. You'd say things like, how I feel about my body is blank. Uh-huh. How I feel others must see my body is blank. And those are designed for the kids to do with a parent or a parent figure. So those are actually, this is the first time I've really brought a parent into the reading of the books. And in fact, there's actually a little note during the book written to the parents, is just telling the story. And he's like, you know what, grab your parent. I need to talk to them really quick.
That's funny.
Yeah. And in that little note, it just kind of addresses like, this book can do so much, but this is on you, and how you feel about your body is so observed by your child. Yes. And that's just something that's really been hitting me hard lately. It wasn't until this year, and I'm 30, that I realized, wow, my mom didn't like her body when I was a kid, and I totally picked that up.
Yeah, because my mom did a lot of sort of yo-yo dieting and back and forth. She would lose 30, 40 pounds and, you know, then gain it back in a year. And she did like the Weight Watchers and the Jenny Craig and all the different sort of things that are out, those products that are out there for people that help you, you know, they restrict your calories and you lose weight, and but they don't really teach you a healthy relationship with food and exercise.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fad diets. I see a lot of that happening, and it's just there's something going on. Well, I'm sure you've heard about it. Orthorexia. It's not like a new thing, but it's kind of a buzzword that I've been hearing a lot lately, which is just obsession with health.
Okay.
To an extreme that it becomes kind of a form of anorexia.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a among men who are into fitness, there's another phrase I've heard called bigorexia, like being obsessed with like gaining more muscle and being lean. And yeah, I definitely struggled with a little bit of that when I was an undergraduate. And I mean, I worked out. I was in the gym like 3 hours a day as an undergraduate. Mm-hmm. And I got super ripped. You know, I was like 7% body fat and like 175 pounds or something like that. But, you know, it took an insane amount of work, and I'm too old for that now.
Right. And I think a good test is, does it get in the way of living?
Yeah. Right.
And I think most often you'll find that if it's, if you're restricting yourself completely from certain things, or if you're spending, you know, 3 hours a day in the gym, that's kind of, taking a toll on the rest of your life.
Yeah. Yep. When I first sort of decided I needed to get myself back in shape and stuff. Cause you know, another thing in our family is that we have a lot of diabetes in our family. And so it's pretty critical that I make sure that I'm, you know, not carrying around too much extra fat and all that kind of stuff, because I really don't want to go down that road.
Right.
And so I tried to sort of get back into this, you know, really intense weightlifting and stuff thing. And I sort of sustained it for about a week and recognized, like, it was just like I was in pain all the time. And I'm like, ah, I'm almost 40. This is like not the way to do this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I think an important thing to remember is that you need to develop something that you like to do that makes you feel good about yourself and just do it in terms of, you know, physical exercise. Mm-hmm. Just do something that you feel good about and that you enjoy, mm-hmm. because if you enjoy it, then you're going to keep doing it, and it won't necessarily become like, this is this obsessive thing that I do because I need to be thin.
Right.
Instead, you say, here's an activity that I enjoy that fulfills a bunch of different things in me and is also healthy.
Right. I think that's the same with food. You know, pick healthy foods that you enjoy, because then you'll want to eat them. You don't have to, you know, eat dry spinach all the time.
Right. I like dry spinach, though.
Well, then you should eat it all the time.
My son was – I were joking, speaking of spinach, about Popeye – because, you know, he like eats the spinach and he gets like super muscular. And my son was like, what did he say? He's like, why is Popeye like squeeze the spinach out of a can in the cartoons? And I'm like, well, you can buy canned spinach. He's like, right. Really? I'm like, yeah, it's pretty gross, but it does exist. And back when those cartoons were famous, that was really the only way that most people knew that spinach existed. Because like we always have just, you know, fresh spinach out of a bag or something. Yeah. It's pretty. He was just like, that doesn't look like spinach. Canned? What is that?
Vegetables? What? That's awesome. That's cool though, that he doesn't, you know, that he doesn't see that.
Yeah. Well, I grew up with my grandmother used to can vegetables, and she was just this old Southern lady, and she would like, you know, can these vegetables, and then she would put them in a pot before we ate and like cook them again. And they were always just so disgusting and lifeless. And
yeah.
And, you know, vegetables that are fresh and alive, it's such a different experience. And I know there's a lot of people out there that kind of have that relationship with vegetables. I just talked to, you know, I see kids like that in my classroom that, you know, they won't eat vegetables. And I just, they're like, you just don't know. You don't know. The stuff that's alive tastes really good.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also, and I'm having an eating disorder specialist and a nutritionist look over the version. So I've finished the book, and right now it's in their hands so that I can make sure, you know, there's nothing triggering in here. And there's also a section with the exercises in the back about like actual healthy eating. and what that kind of looks like. So I'm making sure that, you know, it passes.
Oh, good.
Passes the test. Yeah. Because it's not about anything with calories or weight or anything. It's just like, in fact, if anything, it's like you need to probably eat more than you think you do. You need need to not restrict yourself from these important food groups. It kind of goes into like, here's why these things are important. You know, bone health, muscle recovery, brain health, hormone production.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of the things that you see that's, you know, fairly well known and documented is the young gymnasts who restrict their calories really heavily and then don't really experience puberty in the same way that normal kids do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happened to me for several years when I, so the full thing with me is when I was young, about 12 or 13, until I was about 18, I was mm-hmm. bulimic,
uh-huh.
Which if you don't know, it involves like binge eating most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So you're eating a lot of food, but then you're purging it somehow. So uh-huh. you're throwing it up probably. And then I got treatment when I was 18. And then in my 20s, I was so scared of food because I'd only ever known like, oh, you binge eat, you eat a lot of food, you can eat whatever you want. And so I had no idea how to eat. So I just kind of stopped eating. I was really scared. So I only ate the things that felt safe, which were pretty much vegetables.
Uh-huh.
And so I went the exact opposite end of the spectrum. And that's when kind of my body stopped working very well.
Wow.
And I lost way too much weight. And it wasn't until I was about 24 or 25, someone that I hadn't seen in years from high school sent me a message on Facebook and said, hey, you know, you look sick and I don't know what's going on with you, but I've struggled with anorexia myself. So if you need to talk to someone, I'm here. Wow. And that's when it really hit me. You know, I needed to get help. And so I did. It was a struggle though.
Uh-huh.
And I think it took a minute because I actually looked at the message the other day and thanked her. Because Facebook saves all these messages for years. So I looked back at it and my immediate response was a bit defensive, like, no, I'm fine, you know. But and then I sent her another message a week later that was like, actually, maybe I could talk to you about this.
Oh, yeah. Well, it is nice to have. To have those things to look back on, you know, sometimes I'm really touched by the, you know, sometimes it'll send you like those memories or whatever. Sometimes it's silliness, but sometimes you're mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, I remembered that article and I was looking for it. And I'm glad it reminded me that I sent it up because I couldn't find it again or mm-hmm. whatever kinds of things happen. And yeah, it is good to have, I mean, you know, depending on what sort of things you're discussing, maybe you would not necessarily want to have all that stuff saved for all those years. But
oh yeah,
in this kind of a situation,
I have some of nice. Those too.
In this kind of a situation, it's very nice to have that.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell me about how psychedelics have influenced your relationship with body image?
All right. Let's see. So I first tried psychedelics in high school and I didn't use them as medicine at that point because I was in high school and I had no idea what was going on. but I remember the first time using LSD I specifically had an intention to dive into past body image trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And so at one point during the evening, I was having this experience with a friend. And at one point, I kind of was like, okay, I'm going to go kind of like dive into this now. And we were out camping somewhere. So I went into my own tent and just kind of like let myself really experience my body. And just like it just really struck me as this tool more than anything. And it wasn't too skinny and it wasn't too fat. It was just kind of this solid thing that I kind of found myself in, for want of a better word, or using, or, you know, it's part of me, but it was not me at all. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of like really thanked it and really felt it. And other times I've experienced, on the same drug, LSD, food stuff. I've kind of gone into my issues with food. I found myself just really intentionally like enjoying chocolate or like chocolate cake or whatever it was. And it really hit me like, oh, wow, this doesn't matter. You know, like in the scheme of things, this is fine. I could eat, you know, I could eat this every day if I wanted to. I probably wouldn't want to. I would get sick of it. But it was just really nice to really hear my body say, like, I want this right now. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
And it's okay. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have to feel, like, guilty or whatever. This is, like, you know, I'm bad because I ate something that is, like, sweet or got a calorie or whatever. It's like, yeah, like it's such an alien thing when you think about how many people in the world don't have access to clean water or, you know, adequate nutrition, that we in America assign, oh, those are the bad foods and I'm a bad person if I eat those foods. And it's a very strange thing. You know, I think that if we looked at how much we complain about food, or like our photos of food, all the ways that we obsess about food, and then we sort of, you know, juxtapose that with, you know, people that are starving. Like,
yeah,
it calls a lot of our sort of behaviors into question pretty heavily.
Yeah, we are a culture obsessed with food and body image.
Mm-hmm. So you said that besides the issue of body image in terms of weight and diet and things, there's also, you go into some stuff about identity and gender in this book. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, I don't go into it too much because I kind of have the idea of writing a full book on this stuff.
Sure.
But it does touch on, especially, it's more about gender norms. Like, there is no gender norm. It kind of talks to girls, like, if you're feeling pressured to be girly, or like feeling pressured to, you know, be any certain way, it's not real. And for boys, you know, if you're feeling pressure to be this masculine, like no feelings type of boy, or whatever the pressure is at home or at school, you know, kind of really trying to emphasize that that's changing right now. It's no longer really cool to even try to fall into these stereotypes.
Right.
Because kids really respond well to, like, oh, that's not cool anymore, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So it talks about, you know, like, emotions are cool. Emotions, like really feeling what's up in the moment. That's really good. That's really healthy. That's cool. Uh-huh. For boys and girls, you know, because there's this stigma of, like, boys can't cry. And this book is like, boys should cry. and there are a couple of characters in this book who are gay, and it's just not even a thing, you know, they're just in the book and they happen to be gay, and it's not about that, you know?
Yeah.
I think making it a big deal makes it a big deal, and it's just not, you know, it's just
exactly
people.
Yeah. One of the things that, I assume that you've seen the new Ghostbusters reboot.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you totally should. You would like it. But one of the things that's really amazing about that film, and it got a lot of flack about, you know, just from like people about, oh, it's, you know, it's girls and it's, you know, it got a lot of negative press before the thing even came out because of that. But one of the things that I love about it is, like, Kate McKinnon is like the star of the movie. I mean, her character is amazing. She kind of plays, sort of fulfills the role that's like Egon in the old movie. But the characters are not like exact sort of female replicas of the characters from the old one. And her character is just like unabashedly queer. I mean, she's a lesbian, but it's not a thing. She's queer, but nobody talks about it.
Yeah.
There's at least two characters in the film that are like, definitely the subtext is that they're in a gay relationship, but they never mention it. It's just like, you can pick it up by their like behavior patterns or whatever, but it's not like a defining aspect of their characters.
Yeah. That's so good.
Yeah. It's just incredible that we need more of that. Like, it's not a show about this guy's being gay or whatever. It's just, that's a character in the book and it doesn't, or in the show, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We totally need more of that, I think.
It's really good. I do some improv in Austin occasionally, and I noticed that there's been a lot of workshops and things lately about not playing into stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And some of my favorite improv is when, you know, maybe there's a gay couple, but they're just acting like normal, you know, they're not being the over the top hetero or homosexual like stereotype.
Yeah.
And it's really good. And it's so good because I think it's rare, and I hope it gets less and less rare. And it's just like, oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I'll just sort of stick this out here. It's one of the things, just touching back on what you just said, is that one of the things that's been really interesting for me is the way that younger people, whether it's people your age or, you know, even people in their, you know, teens or early 20s, the way that their relationship to gender identity is so much just more organically fluid and accepting of sort of different ways of being than people like, you know, that are like Gen X or you know, older millennials, people that are my age, where there's a lot more sort of expectations culturally about the way that you should be or shouldn't be. It's really refreshing to me to interact with my younger friends, because they just, for them, it's just like not even a thing. It's like,
right,
you know, there's not even anything to sort of like, you know, quote unquote, come out about. It's like, just look the way you want to look. It doesn't matter.
Because when we've been talking about this, for me, it's kind of like, well, I didn't have to come out. Like, this is just what?
Yeah.
Like, right. I don't even, I guess, feel that pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing really to make a big deal out of. And that's totally the medicine that I need, because, you know, I'm sort of hung up on, you know, what will people think about me or whatever. Uh-huh. And it's like, there isn't really anything. And this is the sort of healing work that I've been doing in the last, you know, 6 months or so, which is, you know, really one of the things that has bothered me, is that I feel like I've had a big gap in the time, in the episodes of the show. And because I feel like this struggle that I was going through was like pretty much all consuming. I didn't really feel like I could be creative or like that I could speak definitively about anything, because I kind of felt like I didn't really know who I was. And what I've realized, you know, even just recently, is that like, I'm not really any different than I was before. Like, the only thing that's significantly different is like the clothes that I wear, and like, that doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something to like get worked up about. Who cares?
Yeah. It's something that I mention in this book, is when Marjorie is like, everyone's going to notice, like, cause she has to start regaining weight at some point, because she kind of swings too far, losing weight. And she's like, everyone's going to notice, like, someone's going to run up to me and be like, you're fat, and make fun of me, because that's part of the way this all started, was someone made fun of her weight. Mm-hmm. And one of the people that she's talking to is just like, no one's going to notice, because no one's looking at you as much as you think they are.
Yeah.
You know, we're all kind of the center of our own universe. And it's like that thing when you walk into a movie theater and you walk up front and you're like, everyone's looking at me, but really people are paying attention to themselves. And so like with gender identity, and you're like, what are people going to think about what I'm wearing? It's like, people aren't going to notice.
Yeah, nobody really cares in a
good
way.
No one cares. Yeah, in a good way.
Right. You just be the person that you are. You know? Yeah. I just went to a conference in Viroqua, Wisconsin a couple of weekends ago. And one of the things that was just so healing for me was that I went and I just, like, you know, I dress the way that I dress when I feel comfortable being me. And for the most part, nobody really treated me any different than when I would go to psychedelic conferences in a suit and tie. It's just like, it was not a thing for the most part. And that was like the most healing thing that could have possibly happened. You know, if people come up to you and say, like, oh, I'm so proud of you for, like, being strong or being brave or whatever. Like, but to just, like, look at me and not bat an eye is like more healing in some way, because it's just like, it doesn't really matter. It's not that important.
Right.
And get back to doing what, you know, to, like, healing the world and stop obsessing about, you know, whether you buy your pants in the men's section or the women's section.
Like, right. Yeah. Yeah. It's just such a tiny part of who we are.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Especially when you're tapping into, you know, the higher self that's at the heart of all of us, and that's the same for everyone. What pants you wear to school.
Yeah, it's just a non-issue.
It's pretty dumb, yeah.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us how people can help you bring this book to fruition?
Sure. So until March 7th, I am doing a Kickstarter to help publish this book. I did that for the first book, and it worked really well. And so I'm doing it for the sequel. You can find the Kickstarter at callmeperfectbook.com. That'll just link directly to the page, and I'll be posting updates and things. I have a real bodies photo shoot tomorrow for the book, which is going to be men and women of various ages and sizes and shapes and colors, just doing some photos for the back of the book with a photographer here in town. And there's going to be no Photoshop, and they're all going to be wearing really modest, like, underwear and sports bras and things like that. But I think it's just, it's going to be good. Anyway, the point in that was I'll be doing a Kickstarter live tomorrow and posting updates throughout that. And
oh, cool.
Things like that will continue to happen through the campaign. So at least it's a good thing to follow, just to stay up to date.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. I was hoping to be a part of that photo shoot, but due to going to Jamaica for a week for a medicine retreat, I was not able to schedule that. So have a great time with that.
Thank you. Yours will be pretty good too, I imagine.
Yeah, no, I think it's gonna be amazing. I am working with a group called Myco Meditations, and it's founded by a guy named Eric Osborne, and he's been doing this in Jamaica now for a couple of years, and he has about 15 years of medicine experience. He's been on my show before, and I'm really excited to finally meet him in person, because, kind of like I feel about you, him and I have kind of conversed online now for the better part of a year, and it kind of feels like this person is just like a kindred soul, and you know, we have lots of karma together, and it's going to be great to finally see him in person. And so I'm super excited to do that. And hopefully sometime I'll get to meet you in person, because I kind of feel the same way about you. I feel like I'm amazed at the work you're doing. And
it's funny, because there are just these weird online relationships now. And then even today, just hearing your voice, I was like, oh, yeah, that's this person, you know?
Yeah.
Because we communicate mostly just with text.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. And one of the things that's funny for me is that I would say that most of the people that I consider my best friends are people that I almost never see in person. They're like people in the psychedelic community that I see a couple times a year at conferences or something. And so these academic conferences sort of become like, it's less important, like, hearing the talks, because, like, you know, it's the same people and you've heard them give that talk 15 times. And but what's important is, like, you know, see, it's like I get to hang out with my friends. Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds fun.
Yeah. So we will make sure that we post a link to your Kickstarter on the podcast notes, and we will promote it on our Facebook page. And we are super excited to once again be a part of helping you bring this work to fruition, because I think it's amazing, and I love talking to people about them. I sold probably 3 or 4 of the books that I got from your last Kickstarter at
nice.
A table in Viroqua. And so yeah, we're always telling people, you know, singing your praises. So happy to
cool.
do so again.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, it's been really good talking to you.
You too, Natalie. So the book is Call Me Perfect. It is currently being kickstarted, and please go out there and sponsor this work and help create more amazing resources to cultivate your psychedelic family. So thank you so much, Natalie.
Thank you. It's good to talk to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
My advice is to learn from your children, and perhaps eventually, when you're spiritually ready, you'll turn on with your children if you think that's the right thing to do.
Your friends and your associations.